You're listening to Monday Morning Live, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League.
Welcome to another edition of Monday Morning Live, the Facebook live feed, and Monday Morning Live, the podcast. Thank you for joining us here, our first podcast of the month of July. I am Matt Bach, Director of Communications with the Michigan Municipal League.
Hi, Matt.
And I'm very happy to be joined by Chris Hackbarth. You already said hi, and Harrisana Richards.
Good morning.
So, as always, please follow along, and if you have questions for us, post them in the comments below. If you're watching this after it's already aired, still go ahead and post your questions, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. So, hope everyone had a good 4th.
Yeah, let's keep the show without fireworks today, okay?
No fireworks. Yeah, it didn't seem as bad. Do you think, there are the new fireworks rules out there. Do you think it's kind of early to tell, but I know we only got one media call this year in advance of the fireworks. They're like, hey, what's going on with the new rules? And that was it. So,
see, my trouble is I have a 17-year-old who still wants to shoot fireworks, so that's a problem for me. But no, we didn't hear any issues either.
Okay, seemed to go better because they did reduce the number of days and things.
Correct,
like that. Mm-hmm.
Correct. So. And certain now, obviously, in some of our larger communities, they have even additional things that they were allowed to do. So we'll have to kind of get some feedback this week on how things went. But that'll be one of the things that we follow up on.
Now, I know, Harrisana, you were telling me that in Detroit, they have the big fireworks thing like a week and a half before the 4th.
Yeah.
So you guys have almost like 2-3 weeks of fireworks probably.
Well, I would say that since last year, I know significantly less. Like, honestly, more fireworks around, the times like during the day or early in the evening, but like definitely not as much as last year. Last year was really intense, so I definitely.
I wonder why that was.
I don't know. Weather, perhaps. We had it really rainy.
Oh, it was raining in Detroit? Yeah, I saw it was fine. Then I saw when the Tigers game was like they're putting the tarp on the field because it was storming.
Very much so. Like it was like very much, sunny than a monsoon. So maybe we didn't have the best weather for it this year.
All right. Well, good. Well, I guess that's good, unless you're a fireworks owner and operator.
Quieter.
Yeah. So, So one big thing, kind of speaking of fireworks, just before July 4th, July 3rd, the state released their new emergency rules for the marijuana issue, recreational marijuana issue. I know this is kind of Jen Rigtring's area of specialty, but she couldn't be here today. So we're going to kind of fill in our members a little bit what we can. I will say that Jen did post a blog, an in-depth blog, about the rules on Inside 208, our legislative blog. The thing was like, the emergency rules was like 64 pages, and there were 72 rules.
A lot of details that they needed to get out there. We had a lot of questions, obviously, from our members, as well as from people who are interested in being licensed, and so the state needed to get a lot of that information out. I know we have a webinar coming up.
Yep.
So in addition to what was published last week, and then the summary that we were able to get up on our webpage, we have a webinar we'll be working on.
Is it July 16th at 10 a.m. is the webinar. So you can go on our website, mml.org, right now and register for that. If you're a league member, there is, a non-member government rate. So if someone's from the townships or the county officials, they're welcome to attend at the government rate that's a non-member. So, we're going to have Andrew Brisbo on there. So he's like the guy that knows, right?
Right. He's the director. So he was directly involved in developing those rules. And so we'll have a good opportunity to connect with him and walk through any questions our members have on this new rules process as this whole situation continues to evolve.
Yeah, and Jen posted in her blog, of the 72 rules, there's like 15 that have a direct impact on our members. So it's really kind of crunch time right now. It's the emergency rules are actually now into effect, and they go until they start licensing, I believe, November 1st. So our members are definitely encouraged to go there because they have to now figure out whether or not they want to. They're automatically in unless they opt out.
Correct.
Which is different than how the medical marijuana issue was. Is that pretty unusual? Do you ever anything like this where our members have to really respond to something that a law like this?
It happens. I think in this case, the issue was with medical marijuana, we were able to work through the process, especially on the legislative side, and ensure that local control was protected throughout the changes that were done.
Right.
With this, the recreational, the adult use, proposal. It was drafted by non-legislators.
Right.
So it was drafted and sent out in petition form and then voted on by the public. So there was not an opportunity to try and make sure those things aligned like we can when it's done legislatively.
Okay.
Now, certainly, if it causes problems, that could be one of the areas where we have to talk to legislators about. But you know, when you look at medical, it took years to get the required votes necessary to make changes.
Right.
You know, unless something egregious comes up as we move through the process, it'll probably be a number of years before there's enough momentum to make changes that would be needed.
Do you think most of members have kind of already made up their mind, or you still think there's a lot of uncertainty out there?
I think there's a lot of uncertainty from the standpoint of, again, we just got the rules, so no one knows what the ground looks like as they're trying to set this up. There may be a lot of communities out there that are willing to do it, but they want to know, they don't want to be on the front lines of it.
They don't want to be the first one.
Right, to know, and again, so you have to know what the ground rules look like so that you can set yourself up properly. You know, what are you allowed to do? What are you not allowed to do? Where are the parameters you operate within before they jump in?
One interesting part of Jen's blog, which is really key for our members, it says if a municipality doesn't have an ordinance in place that prohibits such businesses, the marijuana businesses, then the state's marijuana regulations agency is obligated to issue a license to any qualifying business that applies to a marijuana business license. So if you do nothing, basically you're saying, yeah, we want marijuana businesses here. So our members need to be aware of that. I think they are, but it's worth repeating.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's certainly, if someone comes into the state, if a community has not adopted an ordinance, either opting in or out, someone comes in and applies for a license and there's no direction from the local unit of government, the state will issue the license as long as the person qualifies.
Okay.
And then that licensee is allowed to operate.
Right. And once again, we will hopefully be able to answer a lot of your questions during our upcoming webinar on this topic, July 16th at 10 a.m. Go to our website, mml.org, to register for that. So, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say on that, you know, you mentioned Inside 208, and I would encourage all of our members who are watching, make sure you sign up on Inside 208. It's an easy process. That's our legislative blog. As issues come up, I know Harrison is posting new information that's coming up on some stuff she'll talk about today. Jen posted this stuff on the rules. We regularly post updates on not only bill action, but other important administrative actions. So just put your email in, confirm that once you've subscribed, and you'll get those updates.
Yeah, it just comes in your email. It's every time a new blog is posted, you get notified. And that's really also helpful to us, because a lot of times we're actually asking our members to do things, take action, call your legislator on this particular bill to support it or to oppose it or whatever. So it's really good. It helps us, you know, basically help you help the members if you're on that, and you can get the alerts, and then you call the lawmakers when asked.
Absolutely.
So it is summertime. The legislature has been out for a while now, but there's a lot of things kind of happening behind the scenes, work groups and stuff. And Harrison, let's talk a little bit with you. I know you're doing your PFAS is kind of a big issue here in Michigan. So
what
you're in
PFAS
a work group
for?
About that.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Go ahead. Let's test Harrison's PFAS knowledge. Ready, set, go.
All right. Well, PFAS is a collection of substances. So that's how I get around pronouncing that. But nice try, Chris. But no, actually, right before the holiday, we had some big events happen. We have new health-based values for the state of Michigan in regard to PFAS. So this has been a project that the MPAR committee, the Michigan PFAS Action Response Team, has been working together with the Science Advisory Work Group, to really figure out what is the condition of PFAS in our state, where are the health values, and like what are the issues that we're having and how we need to mitigate that according using science. And so what we came up with was health values that have reduced all the way down to 6 parts per trillion and go up from there based on a specific substance.
Okay.
But these are really low for the state of Michigan, for the country altogether. Our neighboring states are more at 14, 16 parts per trillion. And so we really want to make sure that while we are trying to do our best to mitigate the issues and make up the health details of it, we want to also make sure we're not too critical, especially looking at this federal level as well.
Okay. So you're in a work group that kind of working on these rules. How is this going to affect our members then?
Well, the work group process is starting now. Like now that we have these health-based values, we can look and see with industry experts, communities, and other stakeholders in the space what is necessary to be done moving forward to get those full standards that will be adopted by April 2020.
Oh, and those standards then will obviously be stuff that our members will have to comply to.
Yes.
So it's important for them.
Yeah, and that's where the big conversations are going to begin, for sure.
And your role kind of in that is also, you know, you're serving on behalf of our members. So you want regulations, but at the same time, you don't want to force upon our members things that are going to cause them a lot of expense. I mean, you're probably negotiating, you know, so that the issue of local control is preserved, but yet at the same time, we want, obviously, a clean environment. So is it kind of a balancing act with
Absolutely. I mean, we can look back at lead and copper and see what happens, you know, when we need to really figure out, you know, what are the processes we're going to use to mitigate these issues? What's going to come with these new standards? How do communities have to adhere to that?
Right.
So making sure that their voice is at the table, you know, looking back at some legislation that came forward earlier this year, the firefighting foam rules, you know, a lot of communities were already not using PFAS in their systems, or maybe they didn't have training in place because they just weren't using those substances. So how can we create legislation that works for all of us?
Okay.
The same with these levels now. We're looking at, you know, what are the things communities have to put in place, especially for their drinking water, reminding the folks at the table the different things that communities have to do individually, and making sure that we have rules that fit those needs and don't put extra pressure, extra stress, extra cost on our communities.
Okay. And I was at a like an event recently where there was people from different states that were there, and I mentioned PFAS, and a lot of them had this blank look. They didn't even heard of it, and they're outside of Michigan. But it's not just a Michigan thing.
It's a national thing.
But it seems like, I don't know if the awareness is not as high as it is in other areas or other states.
Well, I think it's a mix of both. I think people are now generally aware of PFAS. I mean, even at the federal level, we're having conversations.
Yeah.
I believe Representative Slotkin's having a town hall tonight in her district about PFAS. But I think, like what you said, a lot of people don't know because collectively we don't know. This is new substances that are constantly coming up, even the substances that we may have used in place of previous substances, we're realizing have the same sort of contaminants. And so we're still figuring it out. We're still, you know, having discussions. And what's really great about these health-based values is that this is the baseline. Like, this is where we know the levels are going to be dangerous for human consumption,
right?
Especially how they acclimate in our body.
Okay.
So this may not be the bottom line. It's likely that the next standard may go up. It's definitely not going to be higher than 70 because I think collectively we agree that there needs to be some sort of, you know, a stricter level that meets, you know, the possibility of contamination in our communities.
Okay.
But we're still figuring all that out. So we have until April 2020, I believe, where the formal rule will be in place. And so the league will be at the table having those conversations and reminding folks of what our members need, and hopefully a solution that works for all of us.
All right, great.
So when they, when these recommendations, these health value recommendations that were announced recently, did they pull those from other states, or where did they, where did this, where did the MPART group get their recommended levels from?
So there was a science advisory work group that was appointed by the MPART team. And so what they did was they took some time in the past couple months, looked at research from other states, as well as did some research on their own with mice in particular. And so in our blog online, we'll have a link to the report and also the presentations that were done. So folks can go through that and read it individually to see what the process was.
Yep.
I believe it's like a 60-something page report. So get your reading glasses on. But it really breaks down, you know, to the degree of what kind of testing was done, what is the capacity of these chemicals, how long they last, what are the long-term effects, what are the, you know, what are the effects on people if it is someone who is pregnant or someone who is in different scenarios like that. So really looking at all of those and then combining it to see what level can we say we know something negative will happen on the body. And so that's where they came to their health-based values.
Okay.
And so from there, looking at the ways that we utilize PFAS in everyday uses, from aerosol to nonstick pans to firefighting foam, and seeing where we need to figure out would be the best standard for our state.
All right. Well, that's one work group going on. And Chris, are some other work groups and activities happening behind the scenes as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is definitely a busy summer. I mean, we've talked a lot with Jen when she's been on the show here about short-term rentals.
Yes.
And that conversation continues. There's a larger work group we're involved in with the House and the Senate, as well as then some subgroups of that work group that she's been involved on a weekly basis with.
Okay.
And that's expected to continue throughout the summer. You know, certainly we're having multiple conversations, maybe not in a formalized work group sense, but a lot of direct negotiations with the administration, the House and the Senate on road funding. And ensuring, so John Lamacchia from our team has been directly engaged in that. You know, what are the things that we can do as those negotiations between the leaders are taking place now this summer to remind and insert this concept of investment in local road networks and other modes of transportation beyond just roads. So we've got to make sure we've got a comprehensive solution that invests in all of our transportation
needs. Yeah. Shared or saw a post about Illinois passed a road package and raised the gas tax, doubled what I think they're 18 cents. They raised it to 43 cents or something like that. So they more than doubled it. Were you surprised by that? Does that light any fire under our lawmakers to get something done when a neighboring state kind of shows that it's getting done?
I think so. I mean, Now this is where I don't know the legislature dynamics in Illinois, but I think it is interesting. Like, we are looking at estates in the same place as us, like a new governor coming in, be able to push something that's very much needed by their state because of geographically and usage. Yeah. And I think it does say that, like, other states are ready to take that leap. Other, you know, regions, areas that are in the same region as us understand the gravity of what we need to do to fix our roads.
Right.
So I think it's encouraging to say that it's not something that we're moving on alone.
Yeah.
Well, and you're seeing articles nationally, even at the national level, about the importance of infrastructure as we move into this next round of elections at the national level. Infrastructure's on everyone's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know, we're past the spring thaw, freeze-thaw cycle here, and we still have the damage that we have here. It's not going away.
Right.
So no, I think, again, road funding this summer is the key issue that we'll be dealing with, and that will be the domino that gets the budget done.
Right.
Beyond PFAS and short-term rentals and roads, there are a lot of tax issues being discussed. That's what I cover. We are engaged in any number of work groups right now on the veterans exemption, trying to get changes done to that,
okay.
The disabled veteran property tax exemption that's costing our members, it's more than doubled now in cost since what was originally passed.
Right. So was it the governor came in and they basically exempted them of?
Legislature back about 5 years ago exempted all disabled veterans, 100% disabled veterans, from paying any property tax.
Okay.
So the legislature passed it
and
told the locals to pay for it, which we said, we're fine with a policy as long as you use your own money.
It's great, but why? Yeah,
why are you making
us pay? The burden's being shifted to the locals.
Right,
that's not fair.
So we've been working on that issue, having a number of conversations in the House and the Senate with legislators on that who are interested. And we saw that last lame duck where we had a bill come out of House Tax Policy Committee, nearly unanimously in support of shifting that cost over to the state as opposed to on the locals. So we continue to work on that this summer. There are a whole host of personal property tax changes that continue to arise as that new system, it's not necessarily new anymore, but as we continue to implement that, there are changes that need to be made. We're working with Treasury on some changes they're asking for. The broadband community is looking to do an exemption for them. We have some tax credit issues. Folks are looking to get there, to get in on the action.
Right.
So it's trying to protect local tax base as much as we can and preserve, and any changes that are made ensure that locals are getting reimbursed as they're supposed to.
Yeah. How does this fit into some of the overarching goals of the league in general?
Well, I mean, certainly as you look at our municipal finance agenda, trying to make the change on that.
Basically, we're saying the system is broke, needs to be fixed. Go to savemycity.com.
Right. Well, and it really dovetails in with every argument we're saying about, and even in this report that MSU just published last week.
They published a report basically saying that foundations are having to step up to help locals fund basic services.
Because the money isn't there for locals to provide the basic services on their own.
Yeah.
And, as we keep delivering that message, anytime someone comes in and says, well, we want to have our tax exempt, it works hand in hand with our message of you can't give away over here and expect this problem to be solved. You're exacerbating the problem that local units have. And if you think it's a problem that nonprofits are having to step in and provide basic services, or if you think it's a problem that you're down 20 or 30% in your public safety workforce at the local level and your response times are going up, as we saw in the article from the Lansing area within the last 2 weeks.
Right.
Those are real problems, and we're not going to get to the point where we're attracting talent and investing in the kind of housing we need and the amenities that the new workforce wants if we don't have dollars at the local level. And you can't continue to give tax breaks away that locals have to pay for without acknowledging the money has to come from somewhere to provide those services.
Okay. All right.
So another big one out there is we talk about costs. Public Act 202, the pension and OPEB reporting issue
OPEB
that was passed at the end of
OPEB.
17. Other post-employment benefits, retiree health care.
Okay.
So retiree health and pension. There's a reporting law that was put into effect at the end of 2017. We had hoped to get a little more actual tools for local units.
A little more teeth.
We ended up with a report.
Tools.
Hey, at least they acknowledged there was a problem out there.
Kind of.
Right. So we're working right now. We've got a work group that we've put together this spring and hoping to have some language completed before they come back for the fall that we can move forward on. Again, making that new law actually make sense and work, streamline some of that stuff. So there's a lot of things going on. In addition, then our team is going out working with our different affiliate groups mm-hmm. this summer. So we're meeting with our member groups, whether they be the managers, the mayors, finance officers, public works directors, and speaking to each of them all okay. summer long here. So there are a lot of travel going on this summer.
Good. All right. Well, thank you. Anything to add, Harrisana?
I think.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So our next Monday Morning Live will be 10:30 a.m. on July 22nd. So we hope that you could tune in again. And again, we will be posting this as a podcast later this week. So once again, I'm Matt Bach with the Michigan Municipal League. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Harrisana, for being on the show.
Thanks, Matt.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.